Welcome to the Conversation Continues podcast by IIDA Southern California EDI, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion.
The Conversation Continues podcast was created to serve as a platform to continue the conversation around equity, diversity, inclusion in commercial interior design and affiliated industries. Each episode brings an intimate and thought-provoking conversation around EDI, highlighting individuals from our industry.
Thank you to our sponsors for Mica, Patcraft, 3form, PLP SoCal, and Palace Textiles for allowing the conversation to continue.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another IIDA EDI podcast. And today our series is Unspoken Words, which is a collection of topics about issues that might be hard to talk about, but we want it on a platform that allows us to share information and educational things that we want people to learn about. And today we are going to be talking about neurodiverse workplaces. Correct, Mary?
Correct, Christine.
So today I'm excited because we are going to be having a great guest speaker. And I also have a co-host with me, Mary, and I'm going to let Mary do an introduction of herself, but I've known Mary for many years. A lot of you in the industry know her as well. She's got an amazing reputation. So Mary, I'm going to let you start it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm Mary Davis. I work for Palace Textiles, and I have been active in the past in IIDA and really enjoy all the IIDA activities, and am really happy to co-host this because when I saw HOK present their work on neurodiversity in the workplace, I was absolutely loved it. I was so taken with it. And so with that, I think we should get started.
So why don't you introduce our special and amazing guest today?
The pressure is on.
Yeah.
Mike Getz from HOK is with us today to answer some questions and talk about their research into how design can really work with people who are neurodiverse in terms of the way their brain works. And I thought that that was very appropriate for this series.
Hi, first off, thanks for having me. My name is Mike Getz. I am the Interiors Design Director for HOK Los Angeles. I've been with HOK for, about 15 years now. And over the course of 15 years, I've worked in our LA office, New York, back to LA, Chicago, and now back in LA. And during those past 15 years, my focus has really been on mainly workplace, higher education, and some science and technology projects.
That is a full career. I mean, I can't even believe you did that in 15 years. Are you kidding
me? And that's why I'm ready to retire.
And you're still young.
Yeah. Mike, why don't you, maybe you should talk a little bit about how HOK became aware of designing the workplace around neurodiversity.
So we really have Kay Sargent to thank for that one. Kay is our director of global workplace, literally one of the coolest people I know. So if you do not know her, I highly recommend some Google stalking. She's an awesome thought leader who has conducted so much research around workplace design and neurodiversity really being one of them. So that's kind of how HOK really kind of dove into the topic of neurodiversity through her initial research. And then people throughout the firm have kind of collaborated and expanded upon and launching off from that starting point, really.
Wow, I did not know that. And I actually am going to do some Google stalking now.
She's so cool.
So can you tell people what neurodiverse workplace is for those that do not know? Because this actually was new for me.
Yeah, definitely. If I were to kind of distill it down to its core, it's really about designing spaces where everyone can achieve their highest potential. And that really looks different for everyone. Neurodiversity is a concept that recognizes and celebrates the natural variation in human neurology and cognitive function. And it really kind of promotes the understanding that everyone is different. And some people have neurological differences, whether it's autism, ADHD, dyslexia, and others, you know, simple natural variations of the human brain. And thinking of it rather, and almost celebrating it, really. And one out of every eight people are actually considered neurodivergent. And essentially, they may just be wired a little differently, but they also have incredible strengths. And to help promote their strengths and allow them to operate at their fullest potential, it's really comes down to how we design spaces to allow for that to happen.
So kind of along that same line with this topic, so you're actually talking about how everybody may cognitively react to their workspace, right? Kind of in a nutshell.
Yeah. So think of it like some people want to go to the library and do work, and some people want to go to a coffee shop and do work. If I have to, you know, me personally, if I have to read something with a lot of words, I can't be distracted by people buzzing around me, all these noises. I need a quiet space for me to actually focus. But there's a lot of people where it's the complete opposite, who when there is that quiet, they can't focus. They need that energy. They need that buzz. So it really comes down to providing a variety of choices where people can choose from to do whatever activity they need to do. And it's not... it kind of goes back to, you know, at the end of the day, we're not potted plants. We can't just sit in one little spot and do all of our things, right? We need to get up. We need to move. We need to, you know, go from quiet areas to active areas, places that have more stimulation than less stimulation. So it really comes down to choice and providing that choice in the workplace. So again, you can kind of go to that setting that's going to work best for whatever you need to do or how you work.
Let me ask a question. How do you factor this in your design programming, and how many of your clients are willing to go out of the cookie cutter, you know, workstation situation where everything is identical and
exactly.
I think more now than ever, a lot of our clients are asking the question, how do we get people back in the office?
Mm-hmm.
And getting people back into the office is not the same answer for every single individual. That's kind of emphasizes the need for providing these spaces. And like, think of it, you could be a person that lives alone and you miss that social connection. So that's why you want to go to the office. You want to go to the office for the social connection. But on the flip side of that, you could, you know, be living in a tiny New York apartment with four roommates or a household full of people and you can't focus because there's too much going on, right? So the driving factor is really different for everyone, and how it trans, and clients are very receptive to, and I think they understand, because it's not just, you know, these decisions aren't made based on, you know, just random thoughts and following trends. It's all research-based, and it gets translated into the spaces we design through a variety of different things, through color, through clarity of space, such as like clear lines of navigation, making areas where people or users can control the amount of distractions, control the lighting, control the temperature, areas where people can get out that excess energy and where they can move. Really, stimulation is such a big component of it, and that's whether it's acoustic or noise, visual, physical stimulation, those all impact people differently. So you can't have, or it's not ideal to have a space where it's a consistent design and, you know, level of output throughout the space, because then you don't have that variety.
So Mike, and that also brings up another thing that I thought was kind of interesting with this, I think, specialized area that you guys have been focusing on, which is so needed, is the addressing of, you know, mental health for people, and especially in the workspace and especially after COVID, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if you've seen the show Better Call Sal.
I have not.
Okay. I have.
Okay. So it's a spinoff after Breaking Bad.
Right.
Okay. And so the brother, he has kind of, I feel like neurodiversity in the fact of he has a hypersensitivity to batteries and to lights and to that type of sensitivity and to overstimulation. And so this is kind of making me think of that same thing, like people going into the office. And I think some people, you know, from COVID have got a lot of sensitivities to things now too, like, you know, to germs or just being around people or things like that. I'm sure that that's kind of coming into play with people not wanting to come back into the office.
Oh, 1000%. I mean, I think there's two things. One, we spent, I don't know, almost 3 years in a controlled environment where you really had a lot of control over your space. You can control the temperature in your house, hopefully. You can control the lighting, the noise. And then when you go into, you know, reintroducing yourself to society, going into a corporate office, it's kind of almost a shock where you, old designs, you have no control. It's the same level of lighting throughout. It's the same temperature throughout. It's, you know, the noise is throughout, and there's not those areas of respite. It's really hard to tell somebody that you need to come back to a space, but you have no control over that space. Because obviously you're going to want to be in an environment where you have control, where you feel like it's kind of customized to, I'm sure, take a step back. You know, I think everybody after that couple week period of like, oh, we're only going to be locked down for 2 weeks. Once you realized where this is a lot longer than that, I think so many people started to kind of customize their environment. You couldn't have that makeshift desk anymore. Like you couldn't, it was getting more difficult and your back started hurting when you were sitting at the dining room table doing all that work, right?
Yeah.
And so you were able to find like fully customize your space.
Yes.
To do the best work that you could do. And then telling people to go back into the office where they have that, it's like, well, that's part of the pushback. It's like, this isn't designed for me to be as productive as I can be. Now, you know, there's many other important factors of being back in the office, such as, you know, innovation and being able to collaborate and mentorship, which I think is, you know, stuff that's not necessarily first in people's mind. It's something that we're going to see down the road where, you know, new people entering the workforce didn't have that mentorship, but that's not going to show up for a couple of years, I think.
Right.
But that's an important driver for getting people back into the office. But I think the initial reaction, and it has so much to do with neurodiversity, is really that customization and options.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was just watching, like I said, Better Call Sal, and it completely made me think of you and this topic of, you know, customizing these spaces so people can feel better about coming into the work environment after being away for so long and having control. So
I think the first time I realized like, oh, wow, everything's different, right? Like being in my own little apartment during the pandemic and the first time going into a larger space, like say a Target or, you know, Home Depot, and you walk in, which is not that dissimilar to old office design. You walk in and it's a very large space where you can't, there's so much going on. There's visual cues everywhere. It's overwhelming. The lighting, it's like, it's so bright. It's almost like overstimulation.
Yes.
And going from your little bubble and expanding it, it was like overwhelming. So, you know, the goal is future workplace is not having that consistent.
Mike, what do you think about benching situations? You know, I know they're still being designed, you know, in the offices and that I go into. And, you know, I assume it is still a popular way of working, but it is obviously something that is not good for certain people with certain phobias or maybe on the spectrum. Do you still see benching being, you know, a major spec in your projects that you're working on?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I definitely hope we don't, you know, the pendulum doesn't swing backwards and we end up going, you know, cubicles and offices, because I think that's right. Just an inefficient use of space. But again, I think it comes down to choice. Like mm-hmm. a bench, sitting in a team setting when you and your coworkers are next to each other in a bench environment for certain activities is great. But if mm-hmm. you need to get on a phone call or you need to focus on a contract, you should be able to get up from that desk, whether it's assigned or hoteling, and go into another setting where you can do that.
Yes.
I think the future of workplace and this kind of stuff is less me space, more we space. Like, I shouldn't own this much footprint. I should be able to kind of bounce around, especially in this mm-hmm. hybrid environment, right? Like, you know, there's not everybody's in the office at the same time every day. So why should I have all this space that's dedicated to me? Because it's a waste of stuff, right? Because I'm not utilizing it every second.
That's
of every
true.
Day.
That's a very good point.
No, that's actually a really excellent point. So I wanted to ask, I think that kind of rolls right into it. So how do you think then, or how are your clients responding to the neurodiverse workplace as you guys have been approaching it?
I think they've been responding very well. And I think once we start to explain it, it makes it even more impactful. I think, you know, in general, I think most people think that design is arbitrary. But we really approach our projects with trying to understand the clients and what defines them. And every company, every individual, every organization has their own unique DNA. And once you start to understand that DNA, the solutions start to almost become self-evident. And you start to design spaces around what the company is trying to achieve. And when you start to explain the principles and the elements of design in relation to the research, that's when the client and end users really start to understand and realize that there's actually science behind this. We're not, you know, just picking hot pink because hot pink is cool right now. And just it's the color of the year, right? Hopefully the decisions designers are making are rooted in a lot more than that. So I think at the end of the day, I mean, I think clients are very receptive because, I mean, everybody's at the end, you're running a business, right? And you want your people to be set up for success to help because that helps you, helps the business at the end of the day. And by explaining that it's not a one size fits all solution for everyone, whether or not they're neurodivergent, the end goal works for everyone by providing them with opportunity to be their best selves and be the most efficient person without having unnecessary obstacles in their way that makes their tasks more difficult.
Wow, that's very well said. And it's pretty amazing that you guys took on this topic so that these workspaces aren't just thought of, as you said, just as this cookie cutter, which it used to be, right? Or in some places, it still is.
Not every single aspect of every project has to be unique. And there can be elements that, for a lack of a better word, are cookie cutter still. Like, you can have specific space types that function the same.
Yeah.
But what if the colors change? What if the paint colors, the fabric wrap panels, whatever, the graphics, what if they're different? What if some are more powerful, more bold, more exciting, some are more calm? Like, you know, some people need that variety. So whether it's the same footprint, same type of, you know, space type, it can be designed in a different way that helps provide these options.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So Mary, there was another thing that you had really gathered from seeing all of this evidence when you saw the presentation. Mm-hmm. Did you want to share on that too?
I just said that it was, you know, during the shutdown from COVID, and and Kay Sargent was actually, and Pam Light were giving the presentation. And when it was over, I got up and stood in front of my home office at my computer, and I applauded. because I thought it was something where so often we walk in and everything is gray and, you know, maybe gray and blue and just gray. And the idea that you would actually design around how people react with their brains to everything from color to different spaces where people can work, because some people might need a full height panel around them or a private office to really work to their best ability, or benching for teaming, and, you know, and how each space, you know, should have different areas people can go to get their work done. Seemed like I just thought the explanation of it was great, and how other people with, you know, with who think differently than I do could be taken care of and given a space to work in that would allow them to do the best that they could do and excel at their job.
Yeah. And I think one thing we try and note to clients is, I think the first initial reaction is, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to customize everybody's workstation, right? We're going to, it's going to be a hot mess across the board, but that's that's really not what the design principle behind this is, I think. And it also helps to promote the idea of sharing space, going back to the less me space, more we space. So it's not, you know, you have 10 employees, each desk is completely customized to them, right? No, it's about there's 10 desks, but then there's 10 other work points that they can go to.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you'll have the creatures of habit where if it's completely, everything's unassigned, they will always, you know, there are going to be those people that I will gravitate to this desk because it's, you know, secluded, my back's not to circulation, there's no, the lighting is dim or whatever, or I will gravitate towards this phone room because it's, the colors are calming and I feel more relaxed. So there will be natural gravitational points, but it's not, we're not trying to promote the idea that every single element of every single thing is customized to a specific individual, because individuals are going to change. Yep. They're going to move, they're going to go to different companies, their tasks at work could be different. So it's not about creating that hyper customization for the individual. It's just more of a customization across the board so they can find those areas that help them do what they need to do.
I love that.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It is. And again, you know, bringing up this topic, I think, and working with that element and thinking about that. And again, you know, coming out of the pandemic that we're in, and now more than ever, really finding society to be willing to address mental health and mental illness and all the different things that people are going through. And the fact that a lot of us don't know what other people are going through. So I think it's,
I think it's making the workplace not a one size fits all workplace.
Yes,
exactly.
Exactly.
Because none of us are the same.
Exactly.
For a good reason, right?
We're all unique.
Exactly. Wow. So you explained this so eloquently. So how can people get a hold of you, find out more information, get a deeper dive on this topic, and so forth?
Yeah, a couple different ways. You could always email me, mike@hok.com. I also would highly recommend logging on to our website, hok.com. And on there is the actual full white paper of all of the neurodiversity research. It's quite lengthy. I try to hopefully summarize it today in very simple terms, but I highly recommend reading it because it goes into so much detail and specifics about people that are hyposensitive versus hypersensitive. And it really provides concrete examples and visuals that help explain a variety of different design elements and how they can potentially impact people.
Oh my gosh, I just love it. Oh my gosh. We can't thank you enough. So with that, Mary, I want to thank you so much for co-hosting this with me today. You were a delight as always. You are just such a blessing.
Oh, and thank you.
Mike, you are so wonderful. I want you to come back. I want to put you in my pocket because your energy is so wonderful.
thank you.
You're so brilliant.
Well, I'll be honest, it wasn't all me. I have Kay and the rest of the team to thank. But no, thank you very much for having me. It was really fun to kind of dive in a little deeper about what we've been doing.
Yeah, always. HOK just does such amazing work, period, you know?
Thank you.
I would love to ask the audience to subscribe to our podcast. Please give us a review. Tell us how we're doing. Give us feedback. Let us know if there's other topics that you're interested in hearing. And, you know, Mary, would you like to say any lasting comments?
No, I just want to thank you for allowing me to be part of this. And Mike, for being willing to take time out of his busy schedule to come on and do this for us. And I hope that everybody goes to the HOK site and looks into it because it's very interesting.
Yep. And Mike, would you like to say any last words before we sign off?
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. And Mike, we hope that we can have you come back on. You are just such a delight.
You know where to find me.
Yes, you do. And we're going to be stalking you. We're going to stalk you on Google.
I'm not nearly as entertaining as Kay, but stalk away.
Okay. You are actually entertaining, but anyways, so thank you everybody for listening today and come back again. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yay.